Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello. Welcome to Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. I am Kate Spencer.
I'm Dori Shafrir.
We are not experts.
But we are two friends who like to talk a lot about serums.
Welcome. Greetings. Hello.
Greetings, one and all.
Let's get the biz out of the way.
Let's do it.
Voicemail. We love to hear voicemails from you.
We do. Please call us. We're lonely.
Truly, we are. It's a treat and a delight to just click over to that Googs voice.
So please call us. That's the first order of business. Yeah. We have a voicemail number. We love to hear from you. We listen to every message. That voicemail number is 781-591-0390. Or you can email us your thoughts, concerns, questions, comments at forever35podcast@gmail.com.
You can join the conversation in our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/forever35podcast. The password there is serums.
Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. That makes our lives great.
And it also helps people find the show.
Oh, that too. That too. Not to make it all about us. Sorry. And of course, all the products we mentioned are on our website, forever35podcast.com. That's where you can find our new merch. You can follow us on Instagram at forever35podcast and on Twitter at forever35pod.
We did it.
We did it.
How you doing?
You know, I am menstruating, everyone. Mm-hmm. I have my period. Okay. It's put me, I don't know. I don't want to blame my period.
Why not?
Well, I don't know. Maybe periods kind of sometimes get a bad rap. You know what I mean? I'm just kind of in a funk today, Dori.
Okay. All right.
I'm a little grumpy.
Okay. Okay.
Which you walked in and I was just like, I'm in a bad mood.
You did say that.
But you know what? I'm also trying to give myself permission to be in a bad mood.
Yeah.
Just be with my feelings about the things that are ticking me off. Mm-hmm. Not be a jerk to the people I care about or the people I interact with, but also not beat myself up for like just having a day.
Yeah.
So listeners, as we record this, I'm having a day, but it's okay.
It's okay.
We all have them, right? And because I have my period, maybe that's part of it.
Totally.
You know, I have little stabby sensations in my uterine area, but
You
know what? I'm grateful to be menstruating. I don't know. I'm trying to really reframe that narrative.
I don't know that you need to. Like you were saying, you can just sort of sit in the shittiness of it.
Well, here I am.
And that's fine.
Literally sitting in the shittiness. How are you?
I am fine.
Good. I'm glad you are more chipper than I am.
I am not menstruating.
Also fine.
It looks like Matt and I are moving.
Take me to your new home.
Well,
can I come with you?
Yes, you may. As listeners of this and my other podcast know, this has been an ongoing saga for months now. We finally decided that buying was just not going to be feasible for us in the foreseeable future.
Hey, you know what? A very relatable thing that I bet a lot of people can relate to.
Well, thank you, Kate.
It is hard to buy a home.
It is hard. And I had kind of had it in my head for a long time that I didn't want to move unless we were buying, because it seemed like why spend all that money to move? It's expensive. We will definitely be paying more than we pay right now, and we're supposed to be saving money for this house, so like what's the point? And then it just kind of then it just kind of finally got to a breaking point. And we decided, you know what? This house feels too small for us. It's like affecting, feels like it's affecting our family, affecting our relationship. It's affecting our mental health. And we have the resources. So let's move. Let's do it.
I'm excited.
There's a house in our neighborhood that's been for rent for a few months that we had walked by like a million times. And we were finally like, you know what? Let's just call the broker and look at it. So we looked at it and we were like, huh, we were like a little lukewarm on it. And then I really started thinking about it and I did a little more research and just seeing what else was out there. I was like, you know what? I think this house could like really work for us. So it looks like we're going to do it and it's going to be a lot more space. I'm particularly excited that Henry's going to have a bigger room and he's going to have a dedicated playroom.
Wow.
So he's going to have like, he's really going to have his own space.
What a luxurious life our friend Henry will be leading.
I mean, you know, he deserves it. The kitchen is bigger and has a lot more cabinets, which is going to be great.
Dishwasher.
There's a dishwasher. There's a washer dryer. Has a lot more and bigger closets.
Yes.
Our house right now has a dearth of closets because, as I've discussed on this show, people in the 20s apparently didn't have as much stuff as we do.
So they have big vacuum cleaners.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's also very like quiet and private.
So neither of us have moved while recording this podcast yet.
Correct.
Self-care while moving. Moving is one of the most disruptive.
It is very stressful. So while I'm excited, I'm also already kind of overwhelmed. I'm also gearing up to do a huge decluttering.
Woo, this is a lot.
This is a lot. Moving is a lot.
Moving is a lot.
There was a period in my life where I moved like every year or every 2 years.
Yes, same with me in my 20s.
Yeah. And I've been in this house for 5.5 years. And we've done periodic declutterings in the house, but obviously haven't moved. So, you know, I got rid of a ton of stuff when I moved from New York to LA.
And now here's the second big.
And then I got rid of some stuff when I moved into this house, but I feel like there's so much stuff in this house that just needs to go. So,
well, it's a really exciting transition for you.
Thank you. I'm excited.
I hope it is as easy and easeful.
Thank you.
As it can be.
I'm like weirdly excited for Henry's playroom. That's the thing I'm like most excited about.
First of all, playrooms are such like a novel idea to me. Like I didn't have a playroom.
Oh, no, I didn't either.
That's such
we had like a den.
We had a den too. Yeah.
But it wasn't like a
That's where we also
playroom.
Like watched TV.
Yeah.
It's where the computer later was when we all had the family computer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm very excited for Henry's playroom.
I mean, you have a playroom.
We do. It was what should be the dining room. I mean, it's very small because mm-hmm. we have a small, older home, but it's where we have like our kids. We put two desks in there for them to do homework. And
it's lovely. I mean, I'm looking at it right now. It's very cozy. It's nice.
Well, I think I've talked about this on the podcast, but one time it was so messy the dog threw up in there and I didn't notice for like 3 days. So
that's my favorite.
That's also what the playroom is. But it is very nice to have a dedicated space for people's things. I feel very lucky we have that space.
Yeah, and look, you know, I think because his bedroom in the new house will be bigger, he could also have a play space in there if we didn't want to have him have a dedicated playroom. But I do like the idea of having just like this room that is a big old yes space.
You and your yes spaces.
I love a yes space. You know, someone messaged me on Instagram that she bought a Pickler triangle for her kids after she heard me talk about it on the podcast. I mean,
is this podcast a yes space?
Yes, it is. There are no no's in this space. You don't have to worry about pulling over a lamp.
I like no emotional no's.
No
maybe.
Emotional no's.
It's an emotional yes space.
Yeah, exactly. So
I think it's great.
Thank you.
I support this 100%.
Thank you so much, Kate. Well, I will be leaning on you.
Oh, boy. I'll help you declutter.
Thank you.
I'm there for you.
Thank you so much.
I mean, because the move will affect the pod. So
the move will affect the pod.
If the mood's got to go seamlessly so this pod can keep running.
I mean, You get it.
So yeah, so it's in my best interest for the move to go well.
Thank you, Kate. That's where I was going with this.
All about me. Pool, move. It's all about Kate when it comes down to it.
That is not true. You are a very selfless person.
That's very nice. Sometimes I am. Can I tell you what I started last week?
Yes, I would love to hear.
I mean, you know, but I signed up for tap dancing and ballet classes.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
As kind of part of like my movement, exploring movement, mm-hmm. joyful movement, at mm-hmm. exploring new hobbies, mm-hmm. pushing myself out of my comfort zone, all those things. So we have a very local, very affordable dance class situation mm-hmm. here where I live. And I signed up for a kind of all abilities ballet and tap class because it was kind of all that was available. The price was way right. I've never taken ballet or tap in my entire life. Not even when I was...
Like even as a child.
I took one ballet class at the age of 3. The teacher said something because my straps weren't right on my ballet slippers and I was so upset about making a mistake. I never went back.
Oh, no.
This is who you're dealing with. So...
Oh, no.
Yeah. I don't like making mistakes. I don't like people being mad at me. That's probably the impetus. But I went... It was terrifying. It was absolutely terrifying. I felt so foolish, I'm not going to lie. It was really scary. But it was also so much fun.
That's so cool.
I arrived late. This was 24 hours after I had lectured my daughter on how she was late for her ballet class and how that being late is a sign of disrespect to everybody
of
else.
Course.
And then... I was late. And I when I got home, I told her, I was like, listen, guess what? I was also late for my
own. Why were you late?
It was a new place for me. So I like didn't, it was dark and I like didn't know where to park. And then I didn't know. And it was just like a total, I was just an idiot. So I like arrived.
Hey, you were not an idiot.
Okay, sorry. But I felt stupid.
Okay.
I got into the class late. It had already started. I've never taken ballet and they were doing like legit moves because it's not just a beginner's class. So then
were they at the bar?
They were all at different spots on the bar. I walked in and I pretended to know ballet.
Amazing.
Like it was something I would have done as a child.
Right.
It's like, I'm going to just pretend like I know what I'm doing and the teacher won't notice.
Set the scene for me. How many people are in this class?
10. Oh, this is what's great about it. All ages, all bodies, all shapes, all sizes, all different, levels of dance skill. So it felt, even though it was really intimidating, it felt really great because sometimes you go to a movement or a fitness class anywhere in the world. I think it's especially heightened sometimes here in Los Angeles because the entertainment industry is here and that's such a looks and body focused industry
yes.
that sometimes you roll into a class and, you know, it's all one body type.
Totally.
And all one age.
And this was not.
No, it was so cool. And it was really interesting to just be in a different space with different people. They were all really friendly. At the end of the tap class, I was like, I've never done this before. Also, my tap shoes hadn't arrived yet, so I had to do the tap class in my ballet shoes.
Which but you had ballet shoes.
I did.
Okay.
And the teacher was very nice, but I was like tapping away in like a soft
Amazing.
Shoe. It was so embarrassing. But at the end, everyone was really nice. And I was like, you know, I've never done this before. And someone was like, that's how we all started.
Aww.
Like, everyone has to start somewhere. And they were, it was just really like.
That's so sweet.
Like, okay, my new tap community. But I really enjoy the physical movement of dance. And I've
yes.
always felt sad that I never did it.
Mm.
I always secretly, I think, wanted to. I had that one bad experience. And honestly, as I left, I felt kind of sad for like past me.
Yeah.
Because I was like, you know what? Teen Kate probably would have enjoyed tap dancing. Same
totally.
With like 11-year-old Kate or 20-year-old
totally.
Kate. And I'm glad I'm trying it, but it does make me a little bit sad that it. I know. Don't you ever have that feeling where you want to just like zoom back in time and just
totally.
Let yourself know it'll be okay?
Yeah.
So that's the new me.
That's exciting.
Dancer. Kate Spencer.
I can't wait to see your moves.
Well, you know that we have a show.
I was going to ask, is there a recital?
There is an actual recital, which in the tap performance, it involves little fedoras.
What?
Like
they
were
mini, like fascinators?
Not mini, I just, just fedoras in general.
Okay.
And they were rehearsing the dance. See, I think these people take this class.
Oh, it's like ongoing.
Yes. Like
okay.
you sign up every quarter, but I
Got
think
it.
These people, you know, some
so
come
when
for years.
Is the show? I need to mark my calendar.
It's in June.
It's in okay. June.
Just Sammy, are we going? Great.
I'm
Sammy and I will be there front row.
Dory,
yes.
Before we transition here,
yes.
Can we just explore this note that said you made a really tasty lentil dish?
Yes. Well, you know, I feel like I haven't really talked about the world of lentils lately.
You know, I started recording in a bad mood, but I'm in a much better mood now.
I'm so glad
and just
to
you
hear
saying
that.
World of lentils really ticks me into a happy place.
It's like a theme park.
Dory's lentil world of world. Lentils.
So I was reading the New York Times newsletter of like 5 weeknight recipes
what to make
or
this
something.
Week?
Yeah. And I think they always include a couple of vegetarian dishes. And one of the vegetarian dishes they included this week was a red curry lentil with sweet potatoes and spinach dish.
Yum.
When I tell you that this dish was delicious, I mean it. Even Matt was like, that smells good.
Did you eat it over rice or over a grain? Just plain, just a big curry.
Lentils are...
Oh, yeah, that's right. You've got to... You've got lots of fiber in those lentils.
Right, exactly. Protein.
Mm. What a complete
I brought
thing.
It for lunch,
oh,
so
you
you'll
did.
Be able to observe it.
I'm also eating lentils for lunch.
What? Look at us.
I made my favorite lentil soup.
Yeah, lentils are so good. This had like coconut milk in it. It's just...
some good fats.
Delicious.
You've got your greens. You've got
everything.
There's
spinach. Yeah, it's really, really good. We'll link to it on the website. But yeah, I just wanted everyone to know that I'm back on the lentil horse.
Sorry.
Should I make a lentil loaf in the shape of a horse?
Well, that's like double whammy. I've always actually wanted to try a lentil loaf. Have you ever made one?
No, I have not.
I would, if you ever want to experiment. I mean, I know you're going to maybe be moving, so this might not be the
time.
But
you know, I did mention that my new kitchen is bigger, so I will have room to make a lentil loaf.
To experiment with your loaves. Mm-hmm. Loaves. I'm into it. I would like to try a lentil loaf.
I'm down to try a lentil loaf. Wait, I want to hear about your dewy skin.
Okay. I've just kind of wanted to do it up a little.
Uh-huh.
Like,
just do
just
it.
Just do it. Definitely the name of this episode, right? Just do it.
Yes.
Probably also the name of 50 million articles about dewy skin.
Sure.
It kind of plays into my like enjoyment of misting and oils.
Mm.
I just like a sticky, dewy skin.
Yep.
So I have been playing around with Wander Beauty has a really great glow mist that mm-hmm. I like. Tatcha has this really great luminous, dewy skin mist.
Oh, I believe I procured this for you at the Tatcha event.
You went to a Tatcha event a few weeks ago and brought this back.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been like carrying this in my bag
oh.
and just like spritzing it
on. And let's share what it is.
It's a luminous dewy skin mist.
Okay.
You mist 2 to 3 spritzes onto your face for a boost of hydration and glow under or over makeup.
Okay.
So for example, today.
Yes.
I actually used the Wander Beauty one today because this Tatcha one was in my bag.
Oh, okay.
And I spritzed it on and then I put a little of the Pacifica BB cream that I like, which I also think is very nice and dewy. I put that on top of where I had put the mist. So it just kind of...
You are glowing.
It's on me right now.
Yeah, I like it.
And then I put a little bit of that Becca like under eye
brightener
on.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
A little bit of Wander Beauty mascara, and I started my day.
Look at you.
I just have, for some reason, makeup has felt very fun lately.
Mm.
I'm not doing it out of obligation or because I want to look a certain way. It just has felt fun to, in the morning, be like, I've got 2 minutes. I'm just going to like stick some stuff on my face. Although I came out one day to like go work and my daughter was like, why do you have so much makeup on? And I did not, like, in the scheme of makeup,
right,
I didn't really have that much on.
What do you think? Because I have found that no matter how much makeup I have on, if I put on lipstick, my husband is always like, wow, you're wearing a lot of makeup.
It's just, and you could just have lipstick on.
I could
on.
Just have lipstick on and he'd be like, you're wearing so much makeup.
I think she noticed that I had highlighter on my cheeks.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I must have looked kind of like shimmery.
Wow.
And my kids never comment on my appearance.
That's interesting.
So I don't know.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I do. Deal with it. I'm dewy now.
Should we take a little break?
Yes, because when we come back, we're going to be talking to Emma.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I like to care for my skin, duh. And It's also something that I do love to kind of like get into the research on.
You do have a curious mind.
Look, I have a curious mind. I can't help it.
You do.
But today's sponsor, OneSkin, has made that easy because they do their own fantastic research for their products. In fact, their products are scientifically validated to improve your skin's health while targeting the root cause of aging. The secret is OneSkin's proprietary OS1 peptide. It's the first ingredient proven to switch off the aging cells that cause lines, wrinkles, and thinning skin, and they've got several studies to back it up. They also have an amazing new sunscreen.
Ooh, our favorite.
Our fave, it's the OS1 Shield Protect and Repair SPF 30 Plus. It's got the peptide. It's a mineral sunscreen. It's got antioxidants. It comes in tinted and untinted. I mean, like, what can't this thing do? I'm just saying. I love it. It's so easy to use, and I love that it's just like, zoop, and it feels so nice going on. But don't take my word for it. OneSkin has over 4,000 five-star reviews and was recently recognized by Fast Company as one of the most innovative brands of 2024. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code FOREVER at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code FOREVER. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, and please support your show and tell them we sent you.
Our guest today is here visiting the States from the UK. It's Emma Gannon. Emma, welcome to Forever 35.
Thank you so much for having me.
And I should say, even though you're visiting the States, you can be heard by listeners all around the world because you too are a podcaster. Let me give our listeners a brief little bio. Emma is the best-selling business author of the Multi-Hyphen Method and is the host of the award-winning podcast Control Alt Delete, which is a really, really wonderful listen. And I shall say, our listeners talk a lot about soothing podcasts. Your podcast is very soothing.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
That's good to know.
And Emma has been published into everything from The Guardian to MTV, Elle, Glamour, and has been a columnist for the Sunday Times, Telegraph, and Courier magazine. And her debut novel, Olive, will be published in June 2020 by HarperCollins.
Woo!
Welcome to Forever 35.
Thanks for having me. I just wanted to say, by the way, that your podcast, you must get this all the time, but it's very good for anxious moments. I feel like I'm just putting on two friends who have like got my back because I've been solo traveling. And I think people say this a lot, but when you're in a hotel room on your own and it's a bit quiet, like, I'm just going to put a podcast on. So I had a bath last night. You guys were with me.
Oh,
very nice.
A great bath.
Well, let's get into it because you're on a little bit of a self-care journey here in Los Angeles. And we're so glad that it's brought you to us in real life. But why don't we start with one of your own self-care practices?
So for me, I think my job is so sociable, which I love. I have a really big family, live with my partner. I'm never alone, really. And what I've realized is I love being alone, like totally alone. Like I've been fine. I've been here for about 8 days alone. I've seen a few friends like for an hour or two for lunch, but I've just felt so guilty for so long that I was like, am I normal that I need to go away for a few days and be silent on my own? So I've been wandering around LA. I've gone to Sephora, spent like 2 hours in there, went to bookshops, went to Book Soup, which is my fave.
Oh, I love Book Soup.
And I just need like to be by myself. And I think that does sound like a privilege and it does sound like a luxury.
Do you feel guilty about that?
Yeah. I mean, I had a conversation with a friend before I left and I was like, oh, I don't think I'm going to post on Instagram that I'm here on holiday. And she was like, why? And also, it's really narcissistic to think that anyone cares like what you post on a daily basis, like overthinking it. And I was like, oh, I just feel really guilty, like I'm going on this holiday. And she was like, you do know that people will find your message around work even more, you know, empowering if they see that you're switching off. So it's important to be like, I'm here doing nothing.
Yeah, because it's interesting you say that. When we saw you were here, I was like, she must be having meetings and here for
totally
business.
I thought the same thing. I'm wondering how you can do that when you're not on holiday. Or is this just a thing where you know that every year you have to take this time for yourself and could because you're not able to any other time? Or can you kind of get those moments when you are home in your own very busy social routine?
Well, I think it's planning in advance because, as you know, when you're running your own business, like mm-hmm. I don't really have anyone to hand it over to. I've got my agent and I've got my team who I can put on my out of office. Like there is someone I can be like, if I don't answer, go here. But at the end of the day, you can't just disappear.
Right.
Like I think just getting away and being by myself for a few days, because I'm here, I'm still here, like doing your podcast. Like it's not a total holiday. And I think I've got to make peace with the fact that I don't think I can disappear and live in a cave for a week. Mm-hmm. Like that's not the lifestyle I've chosen, which is why in the book, in the multi-hyphen life, it's called in the US edition, it's really positive and negative. Like I didn't want to be like, this is perfect, your life will be fixed, mm-hmm. This is the most amazing alternative to the 9-to-5. It's like, no, it comes with its downsides. And having a 9-to-5, like we all know people who put an out of office on and they do disappear. I can't.
Yeah.
But this is the best I can do.
Well, can we talk about that a little bit? Because I do think you bring up an interesting point about the way jobs are moving as technology changes and the way generationally we think of careers and jobs is that you're never ever really not working. I mean, mm-hmm. because the internet and email and Slack and DMs and text makes you almost impossible to ever truly be unavailable. And that does affect self-care. And also when people are hustling for jobs that they're really passionate about or doing three different jobs at one time, you have to be accessible. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, like, what are the challenges and the positives of pursuing a multi-hyphen life?
Well, this is the thing, because
let's explain what that is to our audience first. I realize yes. I did not explain that.
So the multi-hyphen life is my book basically celebrating and encouraging and just saying, woohoo, like waving the flag for if you just want to be someone who doesn't have a bio that they can say, I'm this, they kind of sweat a bit and they're like, I'm actually many different things. It's a book really just saying, I'm a multi-hyphenate. I have fingers in pies, but in a positive way, because I feel like that for so long has been this jack of all trades negative spin, and someone's grandparent would be like, that's awful and insecure and terrible. But actually, some of the most wealthy people in the world have multiple income streams. And I like talking about money. I like talking about women having money, and having many different income streams has totally changed my life. So anyway, that's what the book is about. But one of the positives I will just say, which absolutely trumps everything for me, is I never have to ask anyone's permission ever to go on holiday or do anything. I can do what I want to a certain extent. I don't have to go and ask like a boss in a corner office. That's amazing to me. I just, every day I wake up and I'm like, I can actually, even though it's on my shoulders, make any decision. The negative is, and I think this is why I wrote the book, because it's a massive conversation, is when the physical boundaries around work go. So you don't have an office, you don't have a desk, you don't have, what are the psychological boundaries? Because then it's just in your brain constantly.
Yeah.
Yes. But I'm working on it and I think we can all get there. I just think we need to talk about it more.
It's almost interesting. You have to set boundaries with yourself.
Yeah. I mean, that to me is always the challenge of freelance life, right? Like with our podcast, Kate, we have a very specific structure and we've imposed that structure on ourselves, but we also we're accountable to our listeners. We're accountable to our advertisers. Like there's other people. When you're just pure freelance, I find that really difficult.
Yeah. And also the other thing that I'm still grappling with is, so my job is to write and to create content. So being on emails all day means I'm not doing my job.
Yeah.
And I think Roxane Gay wrote this amazing article. I can't remember what it's called now, but it was basically like, if you have any success, your job turns into like the brand of the job instead of the job itself. Mm. So you're managing like your website and your emails and your Instagram, but actually the job, the reason you're even doing well is because you sat down and did a thing. So you need to carve out more time for that.
Can we talk about how you got here?
Yeah, what has been
How long do you have?
I mean,
how long is your holiday? Yeah. We'll sit here.
It's so zigzaggy. And I find it really hard to reflect on my own journey. You know, I feel like it's not like a bite-sized Instagram quote. Like it's so messy. But really, long story short, is I graduated into a recession. I took any job. Because I literally was scaremongered at university that only like 20% of us would get a job. So it was like, get a job, people. So I worked at a PR agency, which I was really happy with, to be honest. But I was selling like batteries and shampoo. And it just, I mean, nothing wrong with that. But it was like I had to write press releases to make batteries sound interesting. You know, the real kind of like hard stuff. And then, I was talking to bloggers and journalists and writers. And I was like, I want to be on that side of the email chain. Like, I want to be doing that. So over time, I blogged for about 10 years, actually. It's my 10-year anniversary this year. It was a long time of writing for free, but I got a book deal in about 2015. And I was working at Glamour magazine at the time because I'd managed to kind of pivot from working in an agency to working in a magazine. Took a massive pay cut. And it just got to the point where my boss was like, you have a lot of side hustles and they're actually doing quite well. And I actually like you and I don't think you should be here.
Oh, what a great boss.
And then I was like, I went home that night and I was like, did I get fired?
Right. Like what just happened?
I was like, that was really nice, but also really weird. But it was true. I couldn't, you know, you can't do it all. I think that's what's really interesting about side hustle is for so long you can do it on the side. And then there comes a moment where you have to decide if it's more than a side hustle, I think.
And it's a little bit that moment where you decide and you take that leap is very scary, right? Like, are there substantial things you can do to set yourself up for not necessarily success, but not going into financial ruin or maxing out your credit cards in that kind of situation? Like, what do you advise people to do when they transition to the side hustle as the full-time job?
Well, the amazing thing about a side hustle, I know it's like such a buzzword now. And actually back then, I just preferred the word like side project or like passion project, like a thing that you do for fun. I really don't like the term side hustle anymore. I feel like it's been totally like overtaken, but same with self-care, really. You know, when you say it and you're like, I mean the actual self-care, not the like soap that people are selling me. But I think the good thing about side hustle is you're doing it, you're transitioning as you go. you don't just leave your job to nothing. You've already got maybe months or even a year, maybe a couple of years of contacts and a portfolio of work and email addresses and clients and maybe even some savings, because I was earning like £100 or something for a blog post. I mean, I know that's not a lot, but to me at the time, that was quite a lot to just be like getting on the side for pocket money. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just how you transition over. And you've got to be careful because you can't do it on work time, and you don't want your boss to get weird with you. But this is why I wrote the multi-hyphen method. I was like, we all need to understand this is the way the world is moving. Mm-hmm. And A, the job for life doesn't exist anymore. And B, like your Gen Z employees are going to want more from you, I think.
Well, that was really interesting. I was listening to an episode of Control Alt Delete where you interview Glossier founder Emily Weiss. And I think she makes the point that her employees are going to work at Glossier for maybe 1 or 2 years and then move on. Like the way in which younger generations look at work and careers is constant movement, as opposed to, I think, how I'm 40. When I got out of college, there was still this idea of like, you find a job, you get the entry level position at the company, and you just like move up and you're there for 30 years. And that is really shifting and changing.
Also, I love the fact that she was like, I'm making connections for life. These people that work for me, they might not be there forever, but you don't say, oh, okay, you're leaving, and then just never speak to these people again. It's like, I actually have just hired someone for the first time, and that was someone I used to work with about 5 years ago. I love the idea of things coming mm-hmm. back around. And it's like that whole thing of like, don't be horrible to the intern, because the intern might give you a massive job in 5 years' time.
Yeah.
You know, like we all have to treat people really well.
Let's talk a little bit more about the self-care that you've been giving yourself here in LA, or just here while you are. It doesn't have to be because you're in Los Angeles, but just because you've given yourself this break and you've been enjoying quiet, what have you allowed yourself to do to take a break from the busyness of your job?
For me, I find that if I'm in a different location, my brain kind of resets itself, or at least I have a different perspective. I don't know if you have this, but just waking up in a different room, I feel like I don't have the same routine like ingrained in my day. Mm-hmm. I mean, today I got up and went for a swim. I mean, it helps that I'm in lovely Los Angeles when the sun is shining, and people listening to this who might be in London will be like, I hate you right now. It's so grey in London, and I love it there, and I don't think I will ever leave, but it helps to be in a different location. I think just even if it's like going for a walk down the road and like coming back again, I just think there's something about getting out of your environment for a bit really helps. So yeah, I don't know what it is about that, but anytime I'm feeling super stressed, and I do feel like this is a very lucky thing to do, but just, you know, even going on a staycation, like just going by the sea for a few days is good.
What have you taken away in terms of self-care from the people you've interviewed? Because you've interviewed a lot of really incredibly high-powered people on your podcast, like truly young CEOs and people at the forefront of changing industries. Mm. And I'm curious if that comes up with the people you talk to. Is that an important, do you think self-care is an important part of also being a leader or someone who achieves a lot professionally and financially?
Yeah, I think so. And I'll also, and this is something I'm still learning, I really haven't nailed it yet, is the boundaries thing. Because when you set the boundaries, they are there, and then people do follow them. The thing with me is my boundaries aren't rock solid, because I love my job so much, and also I'm a bit of a people pleaser, and also I work still from this place of like scarcity of like, will it all be over? I'm not there yet with like, I'm going to treat this like abundance, and I'm always going to have work, and I'm always going to have this opportunity. I'm still like, better take that opportunity and cancel that vacation, because that might not come around again. So I'm trying to get better at that. I'm not there. But some of the people I've interviewed, they've got rock solid. They work in seasons. Like I remember interviewing Marie Forleo, and she was like, I think she takes like 2 or 3 months off of the year. She does it that way, and her team know, and that's a thing.
Works in seasons.
Yeah. So it's like, and that's also amazing. I interviewed, a founder of a really big tech company recently, and he was saying that he works in seasons. He was like, I'm like 3 months off, 3 months on, 6 months on, 6 months off.
Was this an American?
No, in the UK.
Okay.
But I think he's got to the point now where he's like floating around as a CEO, like as in he's...
Right, what a life.
Like yes. He's kind of not as needed. Also, Gillian Anderson, she was saying that, you schedule in the self-care like you would a massive meeting. Like,
yes.
You literally put it in your diary,
yes,
and you ring fence it like it was your kid's nativity play or something. Like, you cannot miss this. So that's another thing. If you put it in the diary, then it's there.
That, I think, is the key. Really carving out that time and making it a priority is so important, because otherwise it just like falls by the wayside and it's not a priority.
Exactly. You know? I mean, I already know that I'm going to have 2 weeks off in August, and I've ring fenced that now. And anyone that tries to creep into that space now that I've told them, I'm like, you're not someone I want to work with then, because I've told you. I've told you six months in advance. So I think that's the way I'm going to treat it.
Good boundary setting.
Yeah.
Woo, I'm getting better.
Well, professional boundaries are, I don't know if we've touched on them.
We've touched a lot on personal boundaries, yes, but not so much on professional.
Yes, because that is, you have to kind of treat that a little bit differently than you might a boundary with a family member or a friend, but they are just as necessary.
Yes.
Yes.
How do you, were those conversations you said you identify as a people pleaser, were setting, have you had kind of experiences where you've forced yourself to set professional boundaries, or have you kind of, has that come up in your exploration of career and business?
So it's definitely something that I'm always chopping and changing. I mean, what's really great about the team I work with is we're quite experimental. They're a startup agency. They've only been going for 2 years. They're amazing and work. They've come from big, big companies, but they're still learning. I'm still learning. So it's like, it's not like this is how we do things. It's just, let's try this. So for example, I have to write another novel by January 2021, which seems ages away, but I know it's going to take me a full year to write. So I did that thing which made me cringe, where I was like, guys, I'm only going to be checking my emails in the morning and in the evenings, because I if it's urgent, send it to me in the morning. And then if it's not, I'll get to it in the evening. But I need my days. I need my days back. And they were like, yeah, cool, we'll try that out. So I think it's just a case of experimenting. And the other thing I'll say is, I was always so scared of turning things down or saying no, or acting like I'm too busy, or, you know, someone asked me for a favor. You know, you must get this a lot, but I get a lot of like, can I interview you for my book, or can I, include you in this thing, or will you do this panel for free and all this stuff. And I got to the point where I realized that when people say no to me, I just respect them more. I never think badly of them. So now I realize when I say no, they're probably thinking, cool, no worries. So it's just getting over that thing.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I never thought about it that way, but you're so right. You're so,
like,
so
I love
right.
people that have said no to me. Like, I'm just like, they're so, like, good for them. And it's the way they say it.
I feel like my brain just fell out of my nose. Like, yeah, which would be very hard. But yes, you're so right. I have such a fear of saying no. And yet anytime that anyone's ever said no to me in terms of like a professional thing, it's like, yeah, cool, I get it.
Mm-hmm. And I actually, this is really cringe, but when I was really struggling with saying no, I would copy and paste their responses and just put them in my notes, like in my drafts, because I was like, I need to learn from these people who are saying no to me, because it was always like so like a real polite decline, or I'm working on this project, so I'm so sorry, I'm at capacity, or just the way they said it was so good. So yeah,
I love that.
I
don't think that's a cringe at all.
No, I think that's brilliant.
Yes.
Something I want to go back to is what you were talking about. You briefly alluded to women kind of talking about how much they make and money. And I feel like this is a conversation that is like just now starting to happen, this awareness that women in particular need to be talking about this stuff amongst themselves. I'm wondering how you came to that. And then also, how do you determine your own value?
It's a really good one, because what's happened since I've been self-employed is, because I don't necessarily feel like freelancers share like an overall number of their earnings, because it's not really, A, it goes up and down.
Right.
B, I don't feel like it doesn't show what you're worth. Like, there's no salary. It's not like this is just how much I earn every year. So for example, I've been able to speak in like real numbers with other freelancers. So like someone be like, yeah, I'm getting like 2,000 for this, 25,000 for this, 50,000 for this. Or I'll go in a WhatsApp group and go, I've just been offered this. And then someone will go, oh no, you're like, you should ask for more. I did the same job with them and I got 5,000 more. And so it's like just being able to talk in those numbers has opened up everything, because And maybe it's me saying, actually, I don't feel comfortable yet announcing, like, I make this. But for some reason, announcing what I make per project still feels clear and still feels good. But I don't know if it's a British thing, but I still would find it really weird if someone asked me, like, I want to know exactly how much money is in your bank account.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't think that's a British thing. I think that's also an American thing. There is this taboo around money.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
I want to totally switch gears.
Go. Take it to a different place, Tara.
I am curious what the sort of podcasting community is like in the UK.
That's a really good question. I feel like, I don't know if it's just me, but I guess when you're a journalist or you're a writer or you're a podcaster, like, I think everyone just spends a lot of time by themselves or like with the other podcast person. But I did go to the Acast Christmas party in the London offices, and they keep, you know, expanding and expanding. And it was like turned into a rave. It was like a crazy house party. Everyone was so fun. I felt like it was a lot of people who like hadn't been out of the house for a while. Like everyone was drinking, feral. Everyone was dancing, everyone was feral. Yes. I wanted to like say like frat party. I don't even know what that is, but I feel like it was
it's
like that.
Thing we have here. I've never been to one.
But it got really rowdy. And also it was really exciting because, you know, there was a speech and it was like, well done, everyone. Like, this is a really great industry to be in. I feel like podcasting is accidentally turned into like the new YouTube or something because I don't know about you guys, but I definitely fell into it kind of by accident and realized that actually, you know, there is money to be made and there is a lot of fun to be had.
Yes, totally.
And that's another thing about podcasting is and talking about the money thing is, yes, it's hard to make money from podcasting because it's like, I think back in 2009 where you start a blog, you don't immediately get paid for having a blog. It's like it takes ages, and also you have to build up an audience. But once you have the audience, you know, my podcast is like my main income stream now. I live off it. It's like double what I used to earn at Glamour, you know. So it's possible, and I kind of want to tell people that.
Yeah, I mean, the same for us.
We try to talk about pretty transparently how we do our business of the podcast. We did not intend to start a business, but we're very fortunate that it's turned into that. I want to ask about your new novel, Olive, because we haven't read it yet, but one thing that really struck me in reading about it is that it's and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's about the kind of decisions one makes in life, especially kind of around the age I assume that you are, which is, let's say, 30s.
Yep.
And one of the things it addresses is the choice not to have children. And this is something that has come up with a lot of our listeners, and especially since Dory had a child, I'm a parent as well. We've talked about having kids more. We've heard from listeners who, you know, don't want to participate in those conversations. And I think, which is totally great and fine, but I think still people, especially women who choose not to have children, are really left out of a lot of conversations, not treated fairly. It's still treated like it's assumed that all women want to have kids.
Yes. That if they don't have them, it's because they couldn't have them, not because they chose not to.
Yeah. And so I would love to know more about this choice for this character in this book. What inspired you to write about it?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because I, for all transparency, I'm definitely on the fence. Like I'm on the side of I'm not sure whether I do. And to be honest, right now, I think maybe not. I literally thought I can only write this book now because I'll go one of both ways and I might become more extreme with my thoughts or maybe not. But I was like, because I'm so interested in like all perspectives, I was like, I can write lots of different characters who are grappling with the same topic. So essentially it's about four friends who are all 30 and their lives have been exactly the same up until that point. So they went to the same school, their parents are friends, they went to the same university, they lived in like a student house together, they all got jobs in the same area. Suddenly the baby thing comes up and it like does splinter the group a bit. There's one who can't and is having IVF and is really struggling. There's someone who's pregnant and is like glowing and there's like, don't want to rub it in that, but also like I'm allowed to be happy. There's the friend who has three kids and is just like the most natural mum in the world. And then you've got Olive who is like, where have my friends gone? And she, you know, fundamentally from the age of, and I've interviewed so many women, by the way, for the book, who knew from as early as 5 years old that they do not want children. So Olive is like this kind of, you know, it's such an interesting character. She's anxious about her choices still, but fundamentally she does not understand why anyone would have them. So it's been really fun to write. And I must say, this book is an exploration of how ridiculous it is to put people into boxes or camps. Like, these women have everything in common, and they always will, whether they're a mother or not a mother. You know, Olive is very maternal in many ways. Some of them aren't, and they have children. You know, it's a very nuanced conversation, and so I really wanted the book to open that up.
Well, I'm excited to read it, but we should say it is currently not going to be published in the US yet.
Yet, but fingers crossed. I have a good feeling.
I hope so.
I was walking around Book Soup, and I was picturing it on the shelves. I think
we will manifest it.
Yes, please. But no, it's a really interesting one because. What's funny is even though I don't feel necessarily like I'm going to have children anytime soon, I listen to so many podcasts that talk about motherhood. I love it. And that's what I don't understand is why would you not want to hear those stories even if you don't necessarily have anything like day to day related to that?
That is the big question.
Yeah.
Well, I do think one thing that a conversation that I've had with friends who are childless by choice is that it's never painted or discussed as a positive decision, or you don't often hear from people who've chosen not to have children and like how great their lives are, even in like the cultural, like the tabloid conversation about Jennifer Aniston not having kids. It's always painted as like, what's wrong with her?
And she's right, like suffering. A tragedy.
Yes. And I'm wondering how we can have those conversations. I mean, we obviously, Dory and I can't because we got kids.
But also that there's a kind of interesting bit, you know, in the book where Olive almost feels bad, like in front of her friends of kids when they're having bad days. She doesn't want to rub it in that she loves her life.
Yes, she should.
So she, like, to get into this character of Olive as well, I did a lot of research and I listened to, there's an amazing podcast episode with Terry Gross, who like loves not having kids. Samantha Jones from Sex and the City, like when she's just like rolling her eyes and she's like, ugh, people keep getting married and having babies. Like, there's so many kind of role models in literature, I think, but I just feel like women need to tell more stories. Like, even the Oscar nominations today that got announced with like best director and best cinematographer, it's like they're all so violent and they're also like male gazey and they're also like macho, and I just want some more stories about the like domestic internal struggles that women go through.
Yeah, I mean, that, to be honest, like that has been really challenging for me to get that feedback from some listeners, because it did feel like in some ways it was sort of invalidating my story, which, given that this is a podcast about our lives, felt especially sort of upsetting.
But I feel like it's almost incredibly useful to hear people who might be the same age as you, the ins and the outs of what, how they're going through it. I mean, I interviewed Leandra Medine recently, and I was like, how, I was like, I'm sorry if the motherhood thing might feel cliche as a question, because I, as an interviewer, I also feel like, is it annoying to be asked about kids?
Right.
Kids? So, but I like really want to know, I'm like, how are you running an amazing media empire and having twins?
Twins.
Just genuinely, because we're the same age, I'm just like, woman to woman, like, yeah, I'm just, well done, like, tell me how you're doing it.
I don't think it's annoying at all to ask the question or to encourage the conversation. Where I think it's lacking is in talking to men about their professional accomplishments. And I'm actually just thinking about my husband who just walked through here, and I would be curious to ask him this, because I don't know if I have, but he spent, you know, a year working in other cities on a Broadway show and then a TV show. And I don't know if any of the interviews or conversations he had, press related or otherwise, if many people really pushed the, like, how do you do it all?
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know if that, I don't hear that coming up when powerful fathers are interviewed as much. And I mean, this is, we all know this,
right?
You know, no one.
You're so right. It's like that picture of Anne Hathaway at the Critics' Choice Awards, I think the other night. It's like mum on a night out, and I'm like, until we have, like, I don't know, some Oscar director being like dad on a night out, yeah. Like, I was just, yeah, like, what is that about?
Yeah,
yeah, you're so right.
Well ending on a positive note.
But I will say that I did write the novel. Basically, I believe books should be conversation starters. And it's the same with the multi-hyphen method. I was like, I'm not a guru who's flown in to like tell everyone what to do. It's totally just like, let's chat about this. And the same with Olive. It's like, if anyone in a pub or in a bar is like just talking about stuff, I feel like the book has done its job. You guys must feel like that as well, with like just stuff you put out there.
It's nice.
And with podcasting and too, I feel like.
Yeah. With podcasting.
Yeah. It's an ongoing conversation once it ends in your headphones or on the page. And I think that's so important. So let's find out. We can get all of, if we're in the UK, June 2020. Mm-hmm. In the US and other countries.
If you're listening and you work at a publisher in America.
Yeah, let's publish Emma's book here.
Come on.
The multi-hyphen method is available internationally. And here in the US, it's under the multi-hyphen life. And it's coming out.
Yes, okay. In April. Yes, it's been published with Andrew McMeel. And it's going to be out here. So I'm really excited to see what people make of it. I feel like people are already doing it, especially in the big cities. Yeah. So... yeah, it should be interesting.
So, Emma, where else can people find you?
So, my website is emmagannon.co.uk. I'm on Twitter, Emma Gannon, and Instagram, Emma Gannon UK.
And your podcast is Control.
And my podcast is Control.delete, yes.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank
you. This has been very meta. I've been like stepping inside iTunes.
Yeah. We were in your bath last night. Yeah. Here we are in person. But thank you for, especially on your holiday, taking time to talk to
thank
us.
You.
Yeah, appreciate it. Dory,
mm-hmm.
And we're back in the intenti zone here.
We sure are.
And last week you had intended to start going to sleep earlier.
Yes. So I did manage to make it to bed earlier, like half the week. Last night
That's
I was
great.
In bed at 10, but I was reading and I didn't actually turn out the light till like 11.
The book was that good, huh?
You know, the book was fine, but it was like, it was one of those books where you're like, I don't really like this book, but I want to know what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to keep reading.
Okay. Okay.
So I kept reading and finished the book. And then I was like, wow, I'm tired. And went to sleep.
Great. That's a positive.
You know, at least I was in bed at 10. I like, you know, I stopped my day at 10. Put those yoga toes on. Wrote my one line a day.
So cool you're still doing it. That's great.
Yeah. I'm going to do it for 5 years.
What do you have on the books for this week?
Well, this week I am going to, I'm just going to start taking a hard look at what I want to get rid of and how I'm going to get rid of it. I'm going, you know, am I going to sell it, donate it, trash it, recycle it? The four options.
Okay.
Definitely
run some clothes by me.
I guess donate/give away.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I will definitely run clothes by you.
Sorry, I've, again, once again, made it all about me here.
I did do a pretty big clothes edit not too long ago, but you know, there's always room for more.
There is.
So, what about you? How's flossing going?
Okay, flossing's been better. Every night I'm grumpy about it, and every night I'm like, oh, I said it on the podcast. I gotta do it.
And that's amazing.
And, you know, every day I make my kids floss. So, like, again, it's this thing of, like, every day I'm trying to instill this practice into my children.
Yeah.
And then when I go to do it, I'm like, ugh, I don't want to. I don't like the way it feels. But I did it. Obviously, it's the right thing to do. Like, if there's nothing, there's no argument against flossing. Right?
Like, I feel like there have been some, like, you know, counterintuitive flossing doesn't matter takes, but I'm a fan.
Yeah, I know. My dentist is a fan, so I'm going to do what they say.
What about this week?
Okay, so this week I was thinking I might like to set a goal for how many books I'd like to read in 2020.
Mm.
Not to set myself up for failure, but just to give myself something to shoot for.
Great. What are you thinking, numbers-wise?
I mean, like 15 to 20.
Okay.
Realistically.
Yeah.
Just with the amount of time I'm able to spend reading. And right now I'm reading The Great Believers, and I'm really loving it.
One of my faves.
Oh, it's so good.
It's so good.
So good. If you haven't read it, I'm only about a third of the way in, but I'm just loving it. So
get ready.
Oh, I'm going to cry a lot.
You're going to, tears, just a lot of tears.
Anyway, if anyone wants to join me in reading The Great Believers, we can make up our own very loose Forever 35 book club. So I was thinking of just setting a goal.
I love that.
And also pushing myself to read a little bit outside of my comfort zone.
Mm.
I tend to read a ton of romance. I love it. But I would like to just diversify the kinds of books I'm reading. Make sure I'm reading a diverse group of authors.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, you know, stuff I'm thinking about there.
Every year I'm like, I should keep track of the books I read.
Same.
And then I just don't.
Me too.
But I have been reading so much stuff from the library.
Yeah.
That kind of de facto becomes like a list of stuff that I'm reading.
That's a smart way to do it. You know? Do a lot of library reading too.
Yeah. So, well, this brings us to the end of the show.
Oh, you know what?
What?
We should let people know that we have a new project manager who's joined us.
Because
we're here at the end where we read our credits, which, as you know, are Forever 35 is hosted and produced by Dori Shafrir and Kate Spencer and produced and edited by Sammy Junio. And we have a new project manager, Sam Reed, who's joined us.
Yep. Welcome, Sam.
Hello, Sam. So you'll be hearing their name at the end of every episode now, too.
That is true.
Two Sams.
Two Sams.
Two Sams, one pod.
Ew.
Nope, sorry.
Okay.
Sorry, Sam. But it made Sammy laugh, and that's all I want in life. Okay, everybody. Thank you so much.
Bye.